Imagine you're looking at a multi-billion dollar AI model. You know, one of those massive ones that can write code or like navigate a car through a crowded city.
Right, they're really cutting edge stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And there's this incredibly strong temptation to look at that system and just see magic, to see like a conscious digital brain making organic
Oh,
choices. Now,
absolutely. The hype makes it feel like sci-fi.
it really does. But if you were to strip away the silicon, you know, ignore the massive data centers, look at the actual source code, that illusion of magic completely vanishes.
Yeah, what you're left with isn't a conscious entity at all. It's an engine.
Just a really big engine. And that engine is running on a surprisingly rigid, unyielding set of fundamental mathematical
I
rules.
mean, it's an engineering autopsy, really. When you open up the hood of modern machine learning, you don't find a brain. You
Right.
find this intricate system of valves and gears, all dictating exactly how error signals flow backward through the system to tell it how to improve.
And for you, listening to this deep dive today, that is exactly our mission. We've got this fascinating stack of source material that strips away the AI hype and exposes those fundamental rules of calculus.
Which is so refreshing, honestly.
It is, but we are looking at this with a very specific focus. We want to know how these abstract math concepts act as the hidden engine behind practical machine learning.
Yeah, because if you've ever coded a basic neural network, you've probably blindly typed something like MS-ELOS into your framework and just hit run, right?
Oh, guilty. Without a second thought. But real ML models, with their incredibly messy loss functions and complex weight penalties, they require combining millions of simpler mathematical pieces.
Millions of them.
So, okay, let's unpack this. Because our goal isn't just to memorize math equations. It's to understand the underlying logic, the causality of why machine learning models behave the way they do when they actually learn.
And to understand that behavior, we really have to start at the absolute foundation. I mean, before we can even conceptualize the architecture of a massive transformer model,
Right, the big stuff.
we have to establish how the math handles the most basic combinations of functions. Because in a working neural network, the system is constantly scaling numbers and adding different components together.
Constantly.
So the source text starts us off with the constant multiple rule and the sum and difference rules.
Yeah, and I want to look at the sum rule first,
Yeah.
because the way the text describes it, it reminds me of disassembling a massive Lego set.
Oh, I like that analogy.
Right, like when you're faced with a giant, intimidating mathematical structure, say, a loss function that has an error term plus a weight penalty term plus a sparsity constraint, you don't have to smash the whole thing at once.
No, you definitely don't. That would be a nightmare.
It would. You can pull it apart piece by piece. You figure out the gradient by treating each individual block, each mathematical term, completely independently.
And that independence is computationally vital. I mean, the sum rule just states that the derivative of a sum is just the sum of the
Just
derivatives.
add them up.
Exactly. Let's look at the source's specific example. If you have a polynomial like f of x equals 5x cubed minus 2x plus 7.
Okay,
Treat
easy,
that.
man.
The derivative becomes 15x squared minus 2. You just process each chunk on its own.
And speaking of processing chunks, there is this wonderful detail in the text about what happens to standalone constants, like that plus 7 at the end.
Oh,
When
right.
you calculate the derivative, that 7 completely vanishes. It's just gone. Poof.
Completely drops out of the equation.
And the intuition here is so satisfying to me. Because a derivative measures the slope, right? The rate of change. But a constant number is just a flat line. It never changes.
Yeah, a flat surface has zero slope, so it contributes absolutely nothing to the gradient.
It just poofs out of existence. Which makes sense. If you gave an AI a flat, constant penalty, no matter what it did, that penalty wouldn't give the AI any directional signal on how to improve.
Right, it wouldn't tell the AI which way is down the hill toward a better answer. It would just sit there.
Exactly. So the calculus naturally filters it out as irrelevant noise.
It's mathematically elegant. And alongside that, you have the constant multiple rule. This tells us that scaling a function simply scales its derivative by the exact same amount.
Okay, so if I decide that a certain loss penalty is like 10 times more important than the others, and I multiply by 10.
Then the resulting gradient, the actual force pushing the model to change, is also 10 times stronger. The scaling is perfectly preserved.
Okay, so addition and scaling are highly predictable, pulling apart Legos.
Yeah.
But our models don't just add things, do they?
No, definitely not. To build complex logic, neural networks are constantly multiplying weights by activations, or they're dividing massive terms to normalize data.
And the source material makes it aggressively clear that multiplication and division do not play by those simple Lego rules.
Not at all. And this is where intuition often trips up even seasoned engineers.
Really?
Oh, yeah. If you're differentiating a product, say, a function describing your input data multiplied by a function describing your model's weights, the answer is not simply the derivative of the first multiplied by the derivative of the second.
That would be too easy.
Way too easy. The true product rule dictates this crossing pattern. Like, the text uses the example of x squared times sine of x.
Okay, so how does that break down?
You take the derivative of the first part, which is 2x, multiplied by the original second part, sine x. Then you add the original first part, x squared, multiplied by the derivative of the second part, cosine x.
So it's 2x times sine x plus x squared times cosine x. Both elements have to take turns expressing their rate of change while the other is held constant.
Exactly. They take turns.
Now, the source text gives a geometric visual for this that I actually want to push back on a little bit.
Oh, let's hear it.
So it asks us to picture a rectangle to understand this product rule. Imagine a rectangle where the total area represents our multiplied function. The sides are length f with g.
Right, area is f times g.
Yeah. And if both of those sides grow by just a tiny microscopic increment, let's call them ddn, ddg, the new bigger area gains two thin rectangular strips along the edges.
One strip is f times the tiny g, and the other is g times the tiny f.
Which perfectly matches the two halves of our product rule equation. And here's my issue. The text also admits there's a tiny little corner piece added to the area.
Yes. The corner piece.
Mathematically, that's represented as the tiny df multiplied by the tiny da. And the text essentially says to just ignore that corner piece. Wait, what? Why did we just toss that out? Isn't that inaccurate? We're building precise AI systems here.
What's fascinating here is how the underlying philosophy of calculus handles that exact question. It isn't sloppy math at all.
It feels sloppy.
I know, but it's the absolute precision of infinitesimal logic. You see, calculus is about limits. It's about what happens as those increments shrink infinitely close to zero.
Okay.
As those side strips get thinner and thinner, they scale linearly. But that corner piece, because it's the product of two infinitely shrinking numbers, it shrinks quadratically.
Oh, wow. So it shrinks way faster.
Exactly. It collapses in on itself so unimaginably fast that at the mathematical limit, it becomes truly mathematically negligible compared to the strips.
That bends my mind a little bit. The idea that a physical piece of the geometry can just shrink itself out of relevance. It's like a rounding error that rounds itself out of existence.
That's a great way to put it. And while the product rule handles multiplication, the quotient rule handles division. And division introduces a whole new level of tension into the system.
Tension is the perfect word for it. Because when you divide two variables in a machine learning model, those two terms are fighting a tug of war.
Which happens all the time in normalization layers.
Right. You divide a model's output by the sum of all outputs to get a clean probability. If the top term grows, the overall value goes up. If the bottom term grows, the overall value goes down.
And the quotient rule is essentially a mathematical referee calculating who is winning that tug of war at any given microsecond.
I love the mnemonic the text gives for this. To find the derivative of a fraction, it's low d high minus high d low over low squared.
It's catchy. It works.
It does. Like if you apply it to the function x squared divided by x plus 1, the math shakes out to x squared plus 2x all over x plus 1 squared.
But you know, the conceptual takeaway for machine learning isn't necessarily memorizing that algebra. The text specifically highlights a massive catastrophic trap hidden inside the quotient rule.
Oh, the minus sign trap.
Precisely.
Mm.
Unlike the product rule, where you are adding the two chunks together and order doesn't matter, the quotient rule requires subtraction.
Right, minus high d low.
You absolutely must subtract the term that contains the derivative of the denominator.
And if you're coding a custom loss function and you accidentally flip that minus sign, you don't just get a slightly inaccurate model. Your gradient points in the exact opposite direction.
Which is a nightmare.
You would literally be teaching your AI to get worse instead of better. It would climb the hill of error instead of rolling down it.
It leads to immediate gradient explosion or catastrophic forgetting. The model basically destroys itself because the math instructed it to. Which actually transitions us perfectly into understanding the geometry of that hill. Because finding the bottom of a mathematical shape, the point of lowest error, is the entire functional goal of training an AI.
Right. mapping the landscape. And to map that landscape, the source material brings in trigonometry, which, frankly, I thought I left behind in high school.
A lot of people wish they had, but it's everywhere in these models.
It really is. The text lays out this beautiful cyclical pattern to trig derivatives. If you take the derivative of sine, it becomes cosine.
And take the derivative of cosine, it becomes negative sine.
Then the derivative of negative sine is negative cosine, and then it loops right back around to positive sine. Then infinite mathematical loop.
And those cycles dictate the repeating, oscillating behaviors we see in complex models. Think about positional encoding in transformer models or processing audio waves.
Yeah, you need math that can handle continuous wavy landscapes.
Exactly. But to truly understand the shape of our lost landscape, to know where the actual bottom is, we have to go a level deeper than just a single slope.
Okay, where are we going?
The text introduces the concept of higher derivatives. You see, the first derivative is itself just another mathematical function, which means
we can take the derivative of the derivative, which is denoted as f double prime of x, or d squared y over dx squared. But I have to admit, I look at that and think, why?
It sounds redundant, right?
It sounds like massive computational overhead. If the first derivative already tells the AI which way the slope is pointing, why do we need to know how the slope itself is changing? Doesn't the AI just roll down the hill until it stops?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, knowing the slope isn't enough to guarantee safety. What if you're rolling down a hill, but you're actually approaching the edge of a cliff?
Well, that's bad.
Right. The first derivative just tells you down is this way. The second derivative, the rate of change of the slope, gives you the local geometry. It tells you if the curve is bending upward or downward.
Okay, let's ground that. The text uses an example of a polynomial curve.
Yeah.
X cubed minus 3x.
Good example. Let's look at the points x equals 1 and x equals negative 1.
So at x equals 1, when we calculate the second derivative, the result is positive 6. And the text calls this concave up.
Yes. A positive second derivative means the slope is increasing, the graph is curving upward, forming a shape exactly like a bowl.
A bowl shape. Got it.
Right.
But at x equals negative 1, the second derivative is negative 6.
Right. So the slope is decreasing.
The curve is bending downward like the top of an umbrella. That's concave down. And the text emphasizes that detecting that concave up bowl shape is central to finding minimo in machine learning.
It's absolutely crucial.
Because if you're an AI and your goal is to minimize your errors, you are basically a marble trying to roll to the absolute bottom of a bowl. You desperately need to know that you're actually inside a bowl and not just temporarily balancing on the top of an umbrella.
That is the core of optimization. The second derivative confirms the geometry. It tells the algorithm, yes, you have found a stable concave up bottom. This is a true minimum. Stop rolling.
Because without that mathematical confirmation, what happens?
The model might converge on a settle point or a false minimum, completely halting the learning process prematurely.
So what does this all mean? We've talked about pulling terms apart like Legos, the tug of war of division, the disappearing corner pieces, and finding the bottom of the bowl.
A lot of theory.
Right. For you, the listener, how do these pure math theories actually manifest in the practical code running modern AI? How does this look inside the machine?
It manifests in the very mechanisms that keep the AI from breaking under its own weight. Let's look at what the text calls the L2 weight penalty.
Also known as weight decay, right?
Exactly.
This is one of my favorite parts of the text because it feels like a behind-the-scenes engineering secret. In machine learning, if a model's internal weights, its connection strengths, get too large, the model becomes wildly unstable.
It overfits.
Yeah, it starts memorizing the training data instead of actually learning patterns. To prevent this, engineers add a regularization term to the loss function to penalize large weights.
Specifically, they add a mathematical term, a constant called lambda, divided by 2, multiplied by the weight squared.
Okay, lambda over 2 times w squared.
Now, if you apply the basic power rule of calculus to that squared term, the exponent is the 2 comes down to the front and multiplies with the fraction.
And 2 multiplied by 1/2 is simply 1. They cleanly cancel each other out. So the resulting derivative is simply lambda multiplied by the weight. And here's the secret. That divided by 2 in the original penalty. It's completely strategically fake.
Totally fabricated.
The engineers artificially stick a fraction into the original equation purely for notational convenience. They know they're going to take the derivative later. They know the calculus power rule is going to pull a 2 down from the exponent.
So they preemptively clamp a 1/2 in the math just so it cleanly annihilates the 2 later.
Leaving this beautifully simple clean gradient of lambda times the weight.
It is a phenomenal example of engineering foresight. But the practical mechanical result of that math is profound.
How so?
Because the derivative is just lambda times the weight, the gradient pulls every single weight towards zero with a force that is strictly proportional to its own size.
Oh, wow. It's like a mathematical rubber band attached to every parameter.
That's exactly what it's like.
If the model stretches a weight really far out, making it massive, the gradient snaps it back towards zero with incredible force. But if the weight is small and reasonable, the rubber band is slack, and it only pulls gently.
It perfectly manages the model stability without crushing the useful small connections.
That proportional feedback is everywhere, isn't it? Look at mean squared error, or MSE.
Arguably the most fundamental loss function in all of artificial intelligence.
For a model's prediction against the true target, the loss is the square of the difference between them.
Here's where it gets really interesting. When we apply the chain rule and the power rule to find the gradient of that mean squared error, the derivative becomes 2 times the raw error.
Meaning, the derivative the size of the learning step the AI is going to take is perfectly proportional to the size of its mistake.
Yes. This dictates the entire pacing of how models learn.
It naturally self-scales. Like, think about the behavior that creates. If the AI makes a massive, embarrassing mistake early in training, the error is huge.
And because the gradient is proportional, the gradient is huge.
The model takes a massive, aggressive learning leap to correct itself. But as it gets closer to the right answer, as it rolls toward the bottom of that bowl, and the error shrinks down to a tiny fraction,
the gradient naturally shrinks right along with it.
The updates automatically slow down into tiny, careful little baby steps. It prevents the model from violently overshooting the bottom. It's just a beautifully self-correcting system.
And perhaps the most incredible part of this entire deep dive. The text points out that in practical modern machine learning, you as the engineer don't actually calculate any of this by hand.
Right. I mean, if you had to manually calculate the product and quotient rules for 100 billion parameters, you'd never finish.
You'd be there for lifetimes.
Yeah.
You rely on software frameworks like PyTorch or TensorFlow. And at the heart of those frameworks is an engine called AutoGrad.
AutoGrad.
Yeah, it's an automated computational graph. As your data moves forward through the network, AutoGrad maps every single mathematical operation.
Like a giant ledger.
Exactly. Then, during the backward pass, it acts like a massive water routing system. It opens and closes mathematical valves, applying the constant, sum, product, quotient, and chain rules completely internally.
Just routing the exact right amount of error penalty back to every single parameter.
All automatically.
It is executing the Lego disassembling, managing the tug-of-war of division, evaluating the trig cycles, and snapping the rubber bands across billions of connections flawlessly in milliseconds.
It takes the pure theory we've discussed and operationalizes it at an industrial scale. It is the engine actually turning the gears.
So, to wrap this all up for you, understanding these foundational rules isn't about passing a high school calculus test. It's about seeing the invisible mechanics inside a neural network. It's understanding exactly how an AI structurally penalizes its own weights, how it naturally paces its learning based on the size of its mistakes, and how it mathematically confirms it has found the bottom of the bowl.
We've stripped away the casing and looked at the pure mechanical causality of learning.
Just mathematical gears turning.
Mm.
But, you know, that leaves us with one final thought, something to really mull over. We rely entirely on systems like PyTorch's AutoGrad to perfectly and instantly apply these rigid calculus rules to millions of parameters behind the scenes.
Right. It's a flawless mathematical referee.
But what happens when we start feeding AutoGrad highly unconventional, incredibly complex custom loss functions? Since the machine is just blindly following these exact math rules, step by step into the dark, completely devoid of human common sense.
Yeah.
Are we absolutely sure that the mathematically perfect minima the code eventually finds actually aligns with what we want the AI to learn in the real world? It's a question of whether perfect math always equals perfect logic.